The thing that is in room 101 is the worst thing in the world.
Jeremy Beadle.
Terry Wilder.
Birdie Song.
People like Annika Rice.
Jeremy Beadle.
Birmingham.
Beatles Bell.
Des O'Connor.
Anything with Cilla Black.
Essex.
I want my MTV.
Jeremy Beadle.
Hello, I'm Nick Hancock and welcome to Room 101, BBC Radio's depository for the deeply duff. Yes, if it can rank alongside Countdown, Dungarees and Minuetto Allegretto by the Wombles, the chances are it's in Room 101. Each week, my guests will be attempting to add their own pet hates to Room 101's catalogue, and I will be deciding if they are bad enough to merit inclusion using no discernible system whatever. Music, maestro, please. A little teaser for the guest today, Chris England, playwright, comedian, footballer, person. What was that? Do you recognise it straight away?
Of course I do, yes, because I was asked to choose these things beforehand.
Well, there you go then.
That's the opening to Merry Christmas Everybody by Shakin' Stevens.
Okay, well let's have some more then.
Snow is falling all around me. Children playing, having fun. It's the season. Love and understanding. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Yeah. You're wincing already, which is a good sign.
Well, I think when you're trying to think of the worst thing to put into Room 101, I think it's easy to think of, like, you know, little one-hit wonders. Yeah. And Shaky is like a 30-hit wonder.
Mm-hmm.
And the wonder is, you know, that anybody still buys them. That's what I think.
Absolutely. Well, I think one of the things about Shaking Stevens is people have criticised the Thatcher years for many, many things. But the worst thing, in my view, about the Thatcher years was that Shaking Stevens had 24 top 20 hits during that period.
That's an astonishing record,
it makes
really.
Westland seem nothing, doesn't it, really? Or the Falklands, even. And is it your experience of Christmas, the sort of Christmas that Shaky's singing about there? I noticed it didn't bring a smile to either of our faces, this supposedly cheery Christmas tune.
Yeah, I think, well, you can't really escape the visual image of him performing it. I think that's the problem.
Mm.
He's always been a mystery to me, Shaking Stevens.
Mm.
He seems to have sort of based his career on an entirely unwarranted reputation as a dancer, for one thing, when the only thing that it seems to me he can do is, like, stand on the insides of his feet with his knees pointing inwards.
Yeah.
And as though that's, like, a good thing.
Mm. But what about Christmas? Is Christmas is a fun time in the England household, Chris?
It's just an ordinary time, really. Mm. I mean, the days when Christmas decorations and Christmas trees and things went up in our house, they're long gone. It's for the children, you know.
It is for
and
the children.
And I'm 33 now, and they stopped doing it, like, the year before last.
What I like about Christmas, my favourite thing about Christmas, is watching my brother-in-laws with really, really bad hangovers trying to put up the Teenage Mutant Hero Turtle sewer den, which is an incredibly complex thing to build that you basically need a degree in civil engineering to do.
Yeah.
That's my favourite thing about Christmas.
I think also that Shakin' Stevens sells records because old people think they genuinely remember him from the 50s. They think he's really been around that long. I think they think, oh yeah, Shaky's a mate of Cliff's. I think they think that.
I think you may well be right. I'm not going to put it into Room 101, however, because I think it's been defeated even in its own category. I think of all Shaky songs that the worst one is What Do You Want to Make Those Eyes at Me For?
Well, I'll just have to hold my hands up there then. I think I was just trying to score too many goals with the one record.
Yeah, I think so. I think it'd be far more likely that somebody, Shaky song should be, What Do You Want to Point That Gun at Me For? That's more likely to be in his experience.
Yeah, or What Do You Want to Listen to Anything I Do For? Or What Do You Want to Watch Me Doing That Thing Where I Stand on the Inside of My Feet and Point My Knees Inwards For?
Yeah, okay. Right, we'll move on to your next choice now. More music.
My desire is always to be on the skin.
I can never ever, exactly. You can't listen to that without wanting to shout, get on with it!
Yeah. Yes, it's an appalling piece of work. I think it's made more appalling by the fact that McCartney himself has done so many good things, and you know he's capable of better. It's not like Shaky, really. It's Merry Christmas, everybody. He's on a level with the other things that he's done. Mm. But this really isn't like an appalling aberration. Mm.
Would you rank it alongside marrying Linda?
I think the two things went hand in hand.
I think
he'd done the one thing, this became inevitable.
I think this is a song where Linda said, "Paul, write one that I can sing along to. Write one I can keep up with, Paul."
But it's like he has so much, you know, songwriting ability. But he's chosen to do this with it.
Also, why would you want to sing a song about a big monolith? Honestly, it's like Biddulph Moor with Sea, the Mull of Kintyre, isn't it? It's a very boring place.
It is. It's just a little rock in the sea with no shops.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Exactly. You wouldn't. Frank wouldn't sing about it, would he? You wouldn't be Mull of Kintyre, Mull of Kintyre, so good they named it twice. No way.
Absolutely.
So boring they named it once. I think we have to let it in. Now, as we open up the door to room 101 to send it in, you may hear some of the incumbents that are already there. And each week, the door is guarded by a generic group. I don't know whether you knew that.
Oh, no.
If you get more in, you'll hear more people and you may be able to work out the pattern.
Oh, is there a cash prize?
Mm.
We are loved by our fans. There's no doubt that our fans really do care for us. But, unfortunately, it's a love that doesn't really reach us other than in royalty sheets. You know, they show their concern for us by coming to our concerts and buying the records. Although buying the records is more to do with the fact whether they like the record or not. I wouldn't like anyone to buy my records merely because they thought, oh, well, poor old Cliff, we love him, we'll buy his horrible record.
That was quite good because you were mouthing, "Is that Cliff?" And then he said, "Poor old Cliff,"
poor old
so
Cliff.
That made it easier for you. Do you want to have a stab at it?
I don't know, is it people who are like 52 years old?
Good effort, right? Okay, your next choice is your most hated place.
Would you like to talk us
through that?
One is a hotel room in Naples that I stayed in once when I was a student. I went, travelling around Europe, as you do, Interrail, mm-hmm. And we couldn't find anywhere to stay, and there were three of us. And we found, eventually, this bog-awful hotel room, but there were only two beds in it. And so we pulled a clever stunt on the guy who had the hotel so that he thought there were only two of us, and then two of us went in, and then one came out, and then two of us went back in.
All right.
So we only went out, two at a time in... matching cagoules.
So you didn't do that trick like they used to do in comics where you go on each other's shoulders and get a very, very long coat and they just think one of you is very tall.
Oh, no, if only. No, we went up to the room. We went out for a meal sort of thing, went back to this hotel. Two of us went in, one of us came out, and two of us went back up again. And it came to going to bed. And so I went to clean my teeth and we were right next door to the toilet and the bath and the sink in there. I went in there and the first thing that I noticed from the horrible stench was that the toilet... was full. All right, it did obviously stop flushing some time ago, some months ago, but that hadn't stopped people from using it.
Fair enough.
And it had come up, so the contents of the toilet were level with the toilet seat.
Mm.
And I turned away and flinched, as you would,
mm.
All right, and found I was looking into the bath, mm. which is what people had started to use since the toilet had been out of use. But
can I just, before we carry on, can I just check the view? This does go out at Sunday lunchtime, doesn't it?
While people are eating.
Yeah, that's right.
So I passed on cleaning my teeth. I didn't want to trust the sink. Didn't want to have a look in the sink. Mm. And so we tried our best to settle down to sleep. And I found that the bed that I had, this sort of narrow cot thing that I had a pillow on it and a blanket and stuff. So I lay down on it, try and go to sleep. Because you sleep anywhere when you're a student, interrailing. And I found that the pillow... was a pillowcase full of bed springs, full of hard metal bed springs. You obviously thought, I haven't got a pillow. What would be really comfortable? I know, bed springs. He's put them in, and it's just an incredible aberration, the most least comfortable thing I've ever tried to put my head on. But we did eventually get down to sleep, and but kept being woken up during the night by this noise, which was sort of noise, mm-hmm. very little springy noise.
And, or a very little pig, one of the two.
Yeah. And it was driving us mad, so we'd keep throwing the light on and trying to find where this noise was coming from and then not finding it, going back to sleep. So we eventually tracked it down. It was underneath one of the beds. All right. There was like a little army of cockroaches, all right. And what they were trying to do...
Oh, manoeuvres.
Yeah, was eat a piece of polystyrene, all right, and their little pincers wouldn't bite into it. And you could hear them going... little mouths trying to eat polystyrene, and we didn't sleep after that because it was just too we were just hysterical after that. But it was the worst place I think I've ever tried to spend a night.
It was in Naples. Did you get offered cocaine and prostitutes by Diego Maradona while you were there?
I didn't, no, but I all the rats I could eat.
Right, so that's your first place.
Yeah.
What about your other place?
the East End of London, mm-hmm. for the simple reason that that's where Cockneys come from.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I couldn't let an opportunity to say that go by. No. That was all it was.
It's
where, like, Cockneys come from. It's where all the things that get stolen from you go to.
Yeah.
It's like where Cockney rhyming slang comes from, which is a thing I can't stand. Because it's just a sort of stupid, imbecile language so that they can hide from you the place where they've hidden the things they've stolen from you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like, you know, they come along and they're talking about the frog and car radio, and that's a car radio.
Yeah.
You know, and the apples and video recorder, and that's your video recorder. You know what I mean?
Literally yours. But I'm not going to let it in because...
Which are you not going to let
I'm
in?
I'm not going to let either in.
Oh, no.
I'm not going to let the hotel in Naples in because in the first place you were actually trying to cheat, weren't you, by getting three people into a room for two, mm-hmm. which is your own fault. And you can't blame the hotel proprietor for doing what he obviously did because it was obviously him who nipped up and filled the toilet and the bath. All on his own. And I'm not going to let the East End of London in because it's in.
It's there.
Yeah. Okay.
It's an integral part.
Good music now.
The same you said it was for greatest show. We're gonna beat the world, so here we go. And sing our battle flag for England.
If the canon of popular music was a bathroom, this is that toilet in Naples, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's first of all say who it is. It's...
Well, it's the 1986 England World Cup squad.
With their song...
With their song, We've Got the Whole World at Our Feet.
Right.
And this is just an entire merit-free zone all to itself.
Well, I must say that one thing that this song does do is reassert my faith in the British school system. Because in 1970, when they went to the World Cup, they had Back Home, which is a fairly good song, and it got to number one. And in 1982, they had This Time, which is a fairly ordinary song, but it got to number two.
It runs 22.
Yeah. And in 1990, they had The World in Motion, which got to number one.
Mm.
But the 1986 England World Cup song, We've Got the Whole World at Our Feet, got to number 66.
And lucky to do it.
Yeah.
I think.
So, you know, people have some sense of discernment in this country even now.
They do. Listening to it there, I'm reminded of the... The other thing, actually, the lyrical thing about it, which is we've got the whole world at our feet, and then they sing, there's not a single team that we can't beat. But they say can't in such a way that it sounds like can. So it's like, there's not a single team that we can beat.
Mm.
And then, you know, what sort of a morale builder is that?
Yeah. I'm not going to let it in, because even though it's a bad song, it is a football song, and football songs have to be bad by definition. Mm. So I don't think they've actually done anything wrong here. And also because there was a worse thing about that World Cup, and that was Chris Waddle's haircut, if you remember, which is far worse than this song.
Yeah.
And I think that would have affected team morale even worse. Okay, we'll move on to your most hated book now, which you brought along.
I have.
Very gamely with you.
Well, I'd have to have a copy of it.
Of course.
Yeah. Well, it's a book called The Final by Jimmy Greaves and Norman Giller.
Mm-hmm.
He's obviously done all the writing, all the difficult joined-up writing.
Mm.
But I think the great thing about this book, or the crap thing about this book, the great thing for the purposes of getting it into Room 101, is the lead character, who is football's greatest superstar, United's big hope to win both League and Anglo-American Cup. He's soccer's Casanova, the striker who's as deadly between the bedposts as the goalposts. He's a loner, he's a boozer, a troublemaker... And his name is Jackie Groves.
Do you reckon that was the bit that Norman Giller did? He said, Jimmy, just change the name. And that's why it's written with him.
But that's, you know, this is all on the cover, which is why I bought the book in the first place. But when you actually look inside it, there is actually a character who called Eddie, who equates to Norman Giller. It was like a bloke who's ghostwriting Jackie Groves' book.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, excellent.
Which is fantastic. Now, I can read you a bit of this if you want to be entertained. Or
yes, please. I think you should read it some.
Okay. This is Jackie's I in this. He's the first person singular. Just as I dropped myself back into the seat, the telephone rang. There was a girl on the other end of the line asking if my voice belonged to Jackie Groves. This is the Jackie Groves, I said. Who is this? Have I had the pleasure? There was giggling in my ear. Not yet, she said, but I'm ready whenever you are. It's Sally, remember? Sally. Sally. Sally, my mind sent a procession of girls' faces flashing onto my memory screen like a parade of colour slides. Sally came to my rescue. You gave me your number last night at Tramps. Oh, that's Sally, I said, trying to recall which of the three girls I'd trusted with my home number was Sally. Nice of you to call. I'm ready and available. And willing. What's your address? I winked at Eddie, who threw a look to the ceiling that told me he wanted to get on with the interview. She sounded so hot, I nearly dropped the telephone. Give me 2 hours, will you, honey? I'm residing at 47 Simpsons Place, Kensington. It's just back of the Royal Albert Hall. Any cabbie will know it. My apartment's on the second floor. No later, no earlier than 4 o'clock. Okay? You bet, Jackie. It will be a pleasure, I promise. Bye. I wondered if Eddie noticed the stirring in my trousers as I reached myself back in the armchair. You're not really going to see her at 4 o'clock, Eddie asked. He was not smiling. Christ, you're playing at 7:30 in a match to decide the championship. And there's the final on Saturday.
Wow. And does he see her? Does he, Chris? Does he see her? Tell me, does he?
He does, aye. He gets her hot pants off
page 9. That was another clever bit of name changing as well. The changing of the name Tramp to Tramps, the disco. Very, very good.
Oh. You see the level of imagination that they're operating on there.
What made Jimmy Greaves think he could write a novel? You don't find Kingsley Amis turning up out for West Ham, do you?
Well, I don't really know, but this is 1979 this book dates from, and I would suggest alcohol is the answer.
Fair enough. We'll send it in. The world doesn't need this book, so we'll open up the door.
I think we enjoy what we're doing now more, but we're glad that we went through the discipline of competition. And we did actually enjoy it at the time, because we didn't really know anything else.
Do you know who that was?
No.
No? That was Jane Torvill.
Ah, was it?
So possibly right. Your 42-year-old thing could still be right, because she's quite old, isn't she?
Well, it could just be people who don't look the age that they are, maybe. Yeah,
maybe. Well, we'll have to see. We'll move on. Right, your next is some more music, so let's hear that. It's the final countdown! They get there, it's obviously.
Yeah, sooner the better. Right?
The final countdown by Europe.
Europe, as you say.
Yeah.
As you rightly point out. What I like about this record is that it just falls so far short of what they try to do with it. I mean, I know it's sold, you know, in millions all over the world and all this sort of nonsense. But they've got this little story about people going into a little space ark or something and leaving the planet Earth. And I'm sure what they've got in mind is this giant priapic rocket sort of penetrating the sky, you know, and thrusting great phallic thing. And you know, they're on the way to Venus, for heaven's sake, you know, and obviously...
they show, you know, admirable restraint, I think.
But what I can't help thinking of with this little story that they've got is one of those naff sort of 50s B movies where there's, you know, there's only so many seats and the lovely girl is going to get one and the big hero with square chest is going to get one and there's going to be like a bald stowaway, you know, who's going to be a professor and he's going to be English, you know, yeah. And this farty little cardboard spaceship is what it makes me think of.
Mm. I think we have to let it in because I hate it because it's a Euro hit.
Mm.
It's a formula Euro hit. So let's send the final countdown by Europe in and have a little listen to who's in there.
Last night, I had a wonderful concert in Wales. I must thank everybody who came to it last night if they're listening, because it was great. And I really enjoyed myself. And I wish I could have stayed. I met the most delicious blonde. But there we are. That's, you know, we can't always have the perks.
You know who that was?
No idea.
That was Gary Glitter. Does that help
you? Oh, Gary Glitter. Nope, doesn't help at all.
Okay, fair enough. It's a specific phrase we're looking for anyway. So that's Cliff Richard, Gary Glitter and Jane Torvill we've had so far. Right, most hated television programme, Mr. England.
Well, most hated television programme is Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Right.
This is because I haven't really any time for improvised comedy. I think it's excruciating to watch. I think it's excruciating to take part in. Mm. And it's not funny and it's not clever. Well, I was in a play once. when I was a student, and one of these student directors wanted us to improvise before we, you know, got anywhere near the script. We had days and days of this bloody improvising, and one of the things he wanted to do one day was, I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn out the lights, all right, and I want all of you, the whole cast, I want you all to get down on your hands and knees and make sheep noises, all right. And by the time that I turn the light back on, I want you to have got yourself into a herd. All right. And so, right enough, he turned the lights out, and everybody went down on their hands and knees and were barring away, except me. Because I thought, this is an utterly futile exercise.
Yeah.
So when he turned the light back on, all the others were in a group at the far end of the room, in a herd, all right. And I was standing behind him, all right. And he switched the light on, and he thought, oh, yes, that's very good. There's a herd of sheep there. And then he noticed that I was standing behind me and did, like, just the most catastrophically painful double take. And we had to go out and get ointment for his neck. And so, there you are. Whose Line Is It Anyway? Utterly futile exercise.
I'm not going to let Whose Line Is It Anyway into Room 101. Because although it is just a posh give us a clue, which it is, give us a clue, the sweaters are worse. Okay, let's move on then to your most hated person.
I'm going to go for David Meller, right. I think. David Meller's most hated person.
Fair enough.
It's what he's become, I think, in the last.
Oh, I think he always was one.
No, but I think he was like a run of the mill one.
Right.
And I think he's become an extraordinary one.
Yes.
I think. Lately.
Yes, definitely.
I think he's become not only that crap, ugly Tory MP, all right, but also that journalist he's become. And he's become that personality.
He thinks.
Yeah.
Now, I hate him, obviously because he's ugly, and I find that offensive in the first instance, but also for what he's done to 606, which people claim that he's done a good job and that he's good on 606.
Well,
and that's a lie.
Yeah, and like all Chelsea supporters, he's posh and has got a big mouth.
Yeah. Let's send him in then.
I fell down by moonlight in the Taj Mahal and slipped a disc. It was very, very romantic.
That's a great thing to say, isn't it? I slipped a disc, which was very, very romantic. There's a woman who can find romance in anything. She probably thinks athlete's foot's romantic. That was Barbara Cartland, I might say. So we've now got Cliff Richard, Jane Torville, Barbara Cartland,
Gary
Glitter.
Now, you've lost me.
You still lost. Okay, never mind. We'll move on now to your most hated film. We haven't actually got a clip of this film, but this may as well be from the film, so let's play something which gives us a clue.
Oh, where am I
going to
get all this lot in?
Blimey, you have got a lot there.
No, it's impossible. Oh, listen, you wriggle and I'll shove.
We're nearly there. Don't stop.
Oh,
Look, push the knob. It just won't work if you don't push the knob.
You're right.
Somehow it's better without the pictures, isn't it? You can imagine something funny might be going on. Anyway,
see, now that, you see, that is what's missing from this film, really. That's not, you know, that's not representative of the film that I've chosen.
And the film you've chosen?
The film
is?
I've chosen is Carry On England.
Right.
Which is the last but one Carry On film. The problem with Carry On England is that it's so irretrievably feeble, really. I think all the best people from the Carry On films had either died or retired by this point. Mm-hmm. They've got Kenneth Connor in it, who's the only one, really. And he's playing a part called Captain S. Melly, which is like, you know, smelly.
Right.
And then they've nicked Windsor Davis out of It Ain't Half Hot Mum. Yeah. And you'll never guess what part he's playing. What rank?
No, go on.
He's a Sergeant Major.
Oh, you're joking.
And then the next best they can do is Patrick Mower. Patrick Mower is the handsome boy lead in this.
What year is this?
This is 1976. And basically what happens in it is that all the soldiers are trying to get, all the men soldiers are trying to get up with all the girl soldiers. And Kenneth Connor is trying to stop them. And so they set trip wires for him and trip him up, because that'll stop him catching them. They push him into a cesspit so he gets covered in crap. Mm-hmm. And so that stops him.
And thinks he's on holiday in Naples.
And that stops him from finding them snogging. They change his soap for like soap that makes his face go black.
That's
so that then he comes out on parade and he's got a black face and they're all sniggering, and then he realises he's got a black face and he goes in and then they can have a snog.
Right.
It's just, you know, irredeemably weak and awful.
Right.
And the best gag in it, I'm reading here from the book, What a Carry-On, and what this describes as the best gag in the film is this. The Major's final get-tough tactic, the erection of an impenetrable barbed wire chastity fence between the men's and women's huts, leads to the film's most inventive gag. The men dig a tunnel from their hut to the women's. The women dig one to the men's. At night, they crawl towards each other's huts in their separate tunnels, miss each other, crawl back, and miss each other again. The men, having twigged what has happened, decide to stay put and wait for their partners to arrive. The women do the same.
Mm. That is inventive, actually. And a gag.
And humour-free.
Mm. It isn't going to go in, I'm afraid.
I thought it wouldn't.
Hear the sound again. I'll say three words to you, bring a reprieve for Carry On England.
Go on, then.
Carry On Columbus.
Ah, no, you see, I didn't see Carry On Columbus. You may well be right.
Mm. Oh, believe me, I am. And even if I'm not, I'm in charge, so who cares? Right. More music now.
And it looks like I'm falling all over again.
Over Heels in Love, Kevin Keegan.
Big hit in Germany.
Big hit in Germany.
There you go.
This is Kevin Keegan proving that Work Rate and Determination can't make a very ordinary record a hit.
I remember seeing this performed by Kevin Keegan on a sort of German Top of the Pops programme that was inexplicably screened on British television at about 3:30 in the morning, which was little Kevin in a beige suit.
Nice.
With a microphone, right, jigging from foot to foot in front of like a swirly colour background that was like the end of end sequence of Doctor Who, like that title sequence of Doctor Who, and he was reading the words to the song off a cue card that was obviously about 10 feet above the camera, so he was hopping from foot to foot reading this damn song from, and he's looking right up there, so you're just looking at his chin. It was an extraordinary performance.
Better movement than shaky then.
Almost exactly the same, I would say. But I think this is all. This record also explains a mystery that was perplexing people some years ago, when Kevin Keegan got himself beaten up while he was waiting in a lay-by.
Oh, yeah.
I think this had obviously, you know, come on somebody's car radio, and they were driving along, and they thought, look, it's Kevin Keegan in that lay-by. Here's a chance. I'll get him.
I'm not going to let Head Over Heels in Love by Kevin Keegan in, for the simple reason that Kevin Keegan resurrected Peter Beardsley's England career.
Yeah, well, this is...
With the help of Terry Venables.
I've nothing against him as a footballer. I think he was a great footballer and a great football manager. And this is just a terrible, tragic mistake.
Hmm. So that means at the end of our little chat, Chris, you have managed to get four in. You got Mullachintyre, you got the final countdown, you got the final.
Yeah.
By Jimmy Greaves and Norman Giller. Is that his name?
It is.
And the Doors were... Gary Glitter, Jane Torvill, Cliff Richard, and Barbara Cartland, and the answer was mutton dressed as lamb. Obviously. So that's it. Room 101 was presented by me, Nick Hancock, and starred guest Chris England. Producer was Phil Clark.